Meeting of Parliament, Wednesday, 26th of July 2017. Order proceedings, bills. A bill for an act to amend the Social Security Insurance Act, the Social Security Employment Injury Insurance Act, and the Social Security Open Long-Term Benefits Scheme Act 1997, and for committed purposes. The Honourable Minister for Tourism, Employment, Commercial Aviation and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to amend the Social Security Insurance Act, the Social Security Employment Injury Insurance Act, and the Social Security Open Long-Term Benefits Scheme Act 1997, and for connected purposes, be read a first time.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Social Security Insurance Act, the Social Security Employment Injuries Insurance Act, and the Social Security Open Long-Term Benefits Scheme Act 1997, and for connected purposes, be read a first time. Those in favour, those again, carried. The Social Security Miscellaneous Amendments Act 2017.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move that the bill for the Social Security Miscellaneous Amendments Act 2017 be read a second time. Mr. Speaker, this bill gives effect to two budget measures related to Social Security amendments in 2015 to encourage and assist small businesses and smaller companies. The first measure was the abolition of the employer's social insurance contributions on a second employment. Before this measure was announced, where an individual had a second employment, both employers were required to pay social insurance contributions. With the introduction of this measure, once a maximum contribution is paid by an employer in respect of an employee, no further contribution by an employer is required to be made. The second budget measure was the introduction of a credit of £100 per employee in respect of the employer's contribution for social insurance for companies with 10 or fewer employees. This budget measure is given effect in this bill by way of a regulation making power, enabling the minister to provide for the granting of a credit to employers who employ a prescribed number of employees subject to such terms and conditions as may be prescribed. The draft regulations will be published once this bill is published at last. And these will provide that the credit will be made against the final payment of the year, and companies will only be eligible if they have made the required social insurance and tax payment on time throughout the year of assessment. For a new company, the credit applies to companies with up to 20 employees in the first year of operation. Speaker, the bill, given that it gives effect to budget measures in 2015, will apply retrospectively for the two to 1st of July 2015. I commend the bill to the
Minister. I put a question that the Honourable Member wishes to speak on the general principles and merits of the bill. I will now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Social Security Insurance Act, the Social Security Employment Insurance Act, and the Social Security Open Long-Term Benefits Act 1997, and for connected purposes, be read a second time. Those in favour, those against, carried. The Social Security Miscellaneous Amendments Act 2017.
Mr. Speaker, I'm happy to note that the committee stage on third reading of the bill be taken today is all honourable members of you.
All honourable members of you, that the committee stage on third reading of the bill be taken today. A bill for an act to amend the Housing Act 2007. The Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to amend the Housing Act 2007 be read as
first. I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Housing Act 2007 be read a first time. I should have said 2007, be read for the first time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. The Housing Amendment Act 2017.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move that the bill be read in second time. The Speaker, this bill introduces an amendment to the Housing Act 2007. Its purpose is to inter alia provide for the variation of rent charged for government rental housing stock. Mr. Speaker, the Housing Act does not make specific provision for it. Section 40A of the Act grants the Minister with responsibility for housing very wide powers to make regulations. Among various other matters, such regulations may prescribe the conditions of occupation of premises of tenants in public housing. The bill, Mr. Speaker, introduces a statutory definition of conditions of occupation of premises. The House will note that this definition includes a wide spectrum of matters, including the terms of any tenancy agreement with the tenant, the levels of rent and other charges payable, the method of payment and recovery of arrears of rent, and the use of public housing, including without limitation to the number of occupants. The bill clarifies, therefore, the list of the powers available to the Minister as currently contained in Section 30 of the Act. This House is very well aware of the government's commitment to public sector housing. We are justly proud of our unprecedented investments in public sector housing and of the significant improvement of facilities to tenants. We remain committed to protecting and enhancing our private public housing sector. At last year's budget speech, the Chief Minister noted that government will continue to invest in the upgrading of our public housing stock. Indeed, in my own budget intervention this year, I outlined the continued plan of refurbishing stock in our housing estate this year and beyond. You may also recall, Mr. Speaker, that the Ombudsman called for a review of the housing rents in his annual report last year. Since the announcement was made, the steps have been widely accepted and indeed working. Perhaps more on a matter of principle than because of the value of the income that rent increases will generate. Mr. Speaker, the House will know that public sector rents have not been adjusted for a considerable period of time. In fact, since 1983, not even to reflect inflation over the last 34 years. The increase itself, Mr. Speaker, is relatively minimal. In his 2016 budget address, the Chief Minister announced that government residential rents would be increased, in fact, for the first time in 34 years, rather than 32 years, as he then said, by 3%, which will amount to an average of 62 per week. The increase will amount to 39p for a two-bedroom property at Elementary Estate, or 46p for a two-bedroom property at Mid Harbour Estate, mainly less than half the price of one edition of the divorce attorney. I indicated then, Mr. Speaker, that this very modest adjustment will continue on an annual basis. And even if this measure were applied annually over the next 2 decades, rents at that point will nevertheless remain considerably below what it would have been if 1983 rents had increased consistently in line with inflation over the 34-year period between 1983 and 2017. This bill allows for this to be given effect. Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, I have also instructed for there to be further amendments to legislation to allow for similar increases to be made to other government charges to be increased annually in accordance with inflation. Notice of such inflation will be provided in the bill. This measure, Mr. Speaker, is long overdue. The members opposite have already indicated their support to this principle, and I expect, therefore, that this bill will be supported by all members of the House as fiscally prudent and sensible. The adjustment is extremely fair to our tenants, but it also provides some rebalancing in favour of the general taxpayer, even though, because of the very modest adjustment, it doesn't even correct the effect of inflation over the period. Mr. Speaker, I commend the bill to you.
Before I put this question, does any honourable member wish to speak on the general principles and merits of the bill? I will now put a question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Housing Act 2007 be read a second time. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. The Housing Amendment Act 2017.
I beg to give notice that the committee stage on third reading of the bill be taken today of all honourable members of the bill.
Well, the honourable members agree that the committee stage on third reading of this bill be taken today. come to stage and say a greeting. A bill for an act to amend the Social Security Insurance Act, the Social Security Employment Injury Insurance Act, and the Social Security Open Long-Term Benefits Scheme Act 1997, and for connected purposes. Clause 1 to 4.
Stand part of the bill.
The long title.
Stand part of the bill.
A bill for an act to amend the Housing Act 2007. Clause 1.
Stand part of the bill. There is notice given of an amendment. It's clearly a typographical error. Clause 1 should properly be renumbered. Clause 2, and that is the amendment that is being moved by the Honourable Minister. Notice has been given. Do all members agree that clause 1 be renumbered correctly as clause 2?
Carried. The long title.
So clause 2 as amendment stands part of the bill, and the long title stands part of the bill.
I have long since thought that the House has considered in committee the Housing Amendment Act 2017 and the Social Security Performance Amendment Act 2017 and has passed them with one amendment.
I now put a question, which is that the Social Security Miscellaneous Amendment Bill 2017 and the Housing Amendment Bill 2017 be read a third time and carried. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. I now move to the motion, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
I also move the motion standing in my name, which is as follows. This House approves the resolution pursuant to Section 32 of the Public Services Act 1948 of the appointment of Mr. Dilip Bayram Girawat, MDJP, as the Ombudsman for Public Services. For all the purposes of that act, to effect from Monday, the 26th of June 2017, for the term of 3 years. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Dilip Bayram Girawat is well known to all members of the House and indeed to all members of the community. He is a person who's been involved at times with the running of elections. Both in terms of the general elections and the parliamentary elections in the background and in assisting the preparation for that, and he's been involved in the civil service since 1974. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, it is really a career that has spanned about 40 years in government services. And in that time, Mr. Girawat has sought qualification in areas beyond just the areas in which he practiced in government. So, Dilip started as a clerical officer in the Treasury, and his career has really been related to government finances. He spent a lot of time in the Treasury, Mr. Secretariat, and being a tax office. No doubt some of that time, Mr. Speaker, he may have come into contact with the North Malian government. He ended up being a very senior officer in government finance. He was a senior executive officer in the Treasury Department of Senior Accounting. He then became accountant general in 1995, and then financial secretary from 2007 to 2014. Mr. Tudor Kirsten, who has been in government service since 1974, has served five chief ministers at different times, and Philip ended his career in government service, and working very closely indeed with my predecessor, Peter Caruana, and then with me as chief minister. And he has, of course, also the great distinction of being the first Gibraltarian financial secretary, the first financial secretary who was appointed after the 2006 constitution, not as an ex officio member of the House, but as one of the appointees directly appointed by the chief minister at the time in February 2007. He's a person who, everyone who knows him will say, is of a friendly and mild demeanor. But the qualifications he sought, you know, the same when he was dealing with these financial matters in the Treasury, were beyond simply the sort of qualifications that one would associate with that. Philip qualified with a Bachelor of Science from the University of Manchester in Financial Services in 2002, having previously become a Fellow of the Chartered Institute of Banking in September 2001. He took a Bachelor of Arts degree from the Open University, also in December 2002, and a Bachelor of Laws degree in December 2008. And then it was called to the Gibraltar Bar on the 20th of September 2013, having previously been called to the Bar in the United Kingdom in October 2011. You can see that that is the background of Bill Diane Ferraris. Therefore, when the government was looking to see who would be a good successor to Mario Hook, who was Gibraltar's second ombudsman, we were looking for somebody who had a deep understanding of the workings of government, who had the ability to understand people's rights, and who had the maturity and the manner with people that one would expect an ombudsman to have. And indeed, if I may say so, the sort of role that Henry Beamer as our first ombudsman and Mario Hook had carved out for ombudsman in Gibraltar requires that level of maturity, that level of approachability, and that level of impartiality which few in our community can muster. And so, with that in mind, the name of Bill Diane Ferraris was proposed to the government, and we thought it was absolutely the right sort of characteristics that he represented that would make for a good ombudsman. Dilip has been holding the post of ombudsman as the legislation provides for a short period pending the decision of this House by way of approval of this motion, and I can think of no one better to fill this role now going forward, to fill the very big shoes that Henry Beamer created and now your book filled, and that are left now in that office of ombudsman to continue to do the sterling work that that office does, than Dilip Diane Ferraris, and I therefore commend the appointment to the House of set out in the motion.
I now propose the question in the terms of the motion moved by the Honourable Decision of the Will there be a decision?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, I must forcefully declare that I have counted Dilip Ferraris as a friend for many years. I have to admit that I truly admire his dedication and commitment to all things which he turned his mind. He entered the civil service at the age of 17 in 1974, and indeed reached the pinnacle of financial secretary upon his retirement in 2012 after 38 years of service. As a chief minister, whether or not, he worked in the government secretariat, the income tax office, and the Treasury before being appointed as Accountant General and our first Financial Secretary. It's a figure whose dedication and contribution to the civil service was quite rightly recognised with the award of an MBE in 2015 for public service in Gibraltar. But, Mr. Speaker, did the world first seek for knowledge and self-improvement? And in his own time, he's obtained an honours degree in financial services and an honours degree in law. No mean achievement. He's also a qualified barrister and is a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Banking. And to see that he achieved all this while also undertaking what was an onerous full-time job is merit indeed, and evidence of the commitment still applies to any task at hand. And Mr. Speaker, not content to enjoy his well-earned retirement, Dilip continued his civic duty in having volunteered to be appointed as a Justice of the Peace. And so, Mr. Speaker, in summation, Dilip is, by all counts, a jolly fine fellow and a model citizen for us all. Mr. Speaker, today the Chief Minister is requesting this House to approve the appointment of Mr. Dilip Velvet as the Ombudsman for Public Services pursuant to Section 3.2 of the Public Services Ombudsman Act 1998. Now, Mr. Speaker, the Public Services Ombudsman Act 1998, in its title, describes itself as, and I quote, an act to make provision for the appointment of the Ombudsman for the investigation of administrative action taken by or on behalf of the Government of Gibraltar and providing important services to the general public to regulate the functions thereof and for purposes connected therewith. This is a mouthful. Mr. Speaker, the Ombudsman is also an officer of this Parliament under Section 25.3b of the 2006 Gibraltar Constitution. And as such, Mr. Speaker, the expenses of our office is quite rightly a charge on the consolidated funds. And Mr. Speaker, the role of Ombudsman is a very important one in that they report to Parliament and also have wide-ranging powers of investigation as to fair administration of government. Mr. Speaker, key to undertaking this duty is a requirement for impartiality and independence. For public confidence in the office of Ombudsman may never be undermined. And to see, it's our understanding on this side of the House that the previous two holders of the post of Ombudsman did not have any significant record of employment or civil service, having pursued their careers in the private sector. We have a concern that given the Ombudsman covers such a wide range of entities, such as Financial Secretary, or indeed during his long career as a civil servant, Mr. Wilders may have had some direct or indirect involvement, such that the potential for conflict of interest, whether real or perceived by the public, is unfortunately greatly increased. Mr. Speaker, an extract of the schedule for the Public Services Ombudsman Act list the following areas which would be subject to investigation by the Ombudsman. It's broken down into three areas. First, the government. All government departments and agencies, including, or that probably the generality of the foregoing, the World Water Police. Two, statutory bodies. The Water Health Authority, UBC, the Water Development Corporation, including UTB, Tourism Board, Development Planning Commission, Transport Commission, Traffic Commission, Care Agency, Electricity Authority, Sports Authority, the Gibraltar Culture and Heritage Agency, Borders and Coast Guard, Housing Works Agency, and then thirdly, public utilities and contractors, any person, company, or other entity providing one or more services to the government of Gibraltar or the general public under terms or contract with or a license issued by a town or statutory body. In short, anything that has any government involvement or control. So, Mr. Speaker, Apart from the general financial responsibility of the government department, the financial secretary also has, by way of example, sat on the boards of both the GHA and Good Telecom. Now, it could perhaps be reasonably argued, as indeed the two points already have, by Mr. Wilder, because of his intimate inside knowledge of the workings of the Civil Service and other government entities, is perhaps the best place to consider complaints against him. On the other hand, Mr. Speaker, we have received representations that the Office of Ombudsman may perhaps be seen to be undermined as a result of perceived lack of independence by the general public. Now, Mr. Speaker, on this point, the jury is really still out. And only time will tell whether the Office of Ombudsman should be best undertaken by retired senior civil servants or not. The other area of concern brought from this side of the House is in fact the manner of selection of the candidate ombudsman. Mr. Speaker, no point that I'm aware of has the sequence discussed the appointment of this parliamentary officer with anyone on this side of the House, even if only by way of courtesy as to our opinion. Mr. Speaker, if such an opinion had been sought, in other words, as opposed to advertised as widely as possible, and an independent committee be created to sort this candidate, even if the law can't be exhausted, may make such provision. We think that will be only best practice. Mr. Speaker, this, according to the 2017 estimate, the Postal Ombudsman currently attracts an annual salary of £83,483. Which in itself, if the numbers are correct from the 2016-17 estimate, is a 16.4% increase on last year. And last year's salary was £71,716 at the maximum level, or it appears to be an increase of £11,767 from last year. If you figure, we'd be interested to hear from the Chief Minister for the reason for such a generous increase, albeit admittedly not as usual, 28%. Mr. Speaker, it is a well-remunerated position, which no doubt could have attracted interest for inside and outside the civil service. We'll be interested to hear from the Chief Minister for what process was followed in selecting the candidate being proposed to this House today. Now, Mr. Speaker, given our current reservations as expressed, whereas we have full confidence in Mr. Wilder as a man of integrity and ability, we do have concerns as to whether a retired senior civil servant is perhaps the best person to be appointed public services ombudsman. And we would have welcomed the advertising of the post both within the public and private sector. I say, Mr. Speaker, unless the Chief Minister in his reply can provide some compelling reason for the appointment of Mr. Wilder as opposed to any other potential candidate, either inside or outside the civil service, we have decided in the House that our mind is to exercise our right to abstain on his appointment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Before I call on the move to reply, does any other honourable member wish to speak on this motion? I will then call on the Chief Minister for his time.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm very pleased indeed that the passing of the baton has not been commenced, but there is a passing of the day to a more progressive and positive GSD that might therefore more engage with or being in tune with people's views as to how this community should be run, because nothing could be better for us on this side of the house. And I'm sorry that the Ombudsman is first year substantive intervention as leader of the opposition would be to march his feet all the way to the top of the hill, get them to do nothing, and march them back down again. But the biggest thing is, although I will counsel the Honourable Gentleman that that approach and that even mild mannered religion, if I may put it that way, is not really what this community is looking for at this time in particular. People are looking for us to work together and constructively in order to take this community forward. And in doing things, we know we each have a role. And the role that is ascribed to me under section 3 is all about Mr. Phillips' capability. Given that he at least is here today, he might learn something of the role. Because section 3 of the Public Services Ombudsman Act sets out what my role is in this institution. And my role, which is what people have both decided it should be, is to appoint a person from time to time to discharge the responsibilities of ombudsman. And then for this Parliament to then make any decision as to who should discharge that function for the period of appointment of 3 years. So, let me be clear about what it is that the law requires before suggesting that even in circumstances when appointments are made by the House, we should be going out to advertise. So, under Section 3, I appoint from time to time, but only for a short period. And then I bring to the House, and the House decides. And I brought a motion. Well, the gentleman has not proposed another name. He has not been in touch with me to propose another name. And Mr. Speaker, the fact is in all of the instances when an ombudsman was appointed before, there was no phone call from the greatest Gibraltarian of all time to Mr. McCann. Well, I understand that there wasn't, Mr. Speaker. I understand that there wasn't. And in fact, I will tell you another one more. If there was, and this is now obviously a difference of opinion between a man who is not here and a man who is, as to what might have happened 50 years ago, I can tell him that when there is in the law an obligation to consult, like for example on the appointment of the Speaker, the consultation amounted to, Joe, I am going to appoint X as a Speaker. Not, Joe, what do you think? Have you a name? Should we advertise? So, even when consultation is required, so just as the condition of consultation is, I'm telling you that, and the consultation is not required, there wasn't even one. And this does not require consultation. This is different. This is an appointment by the House, Mr. Speaker. The appointment is going to be made by us here, today. The notice of appointment bound under the Gazette is only a short-term appointment. The job is given by the people in this House through their elected representatives. Now, it's all very well to say that somebody is highly qualified to go through the qualifications that the Honourable Mr. Diane did on his time and say, well, he's a job as a fellow, Mr. Speaker. And then, Mr. Speaker, to link into the man, which is an effect that the Honourable Gentleman has done, by saying he is not able to discharge the functions of the office of ombudsman despite the qualifications that he has, because they impugn his ability to be impartial. How can the Honourable Gentleman opposite get up and say that simply because someone has been in civil service, they cannot be impartial? How can he say that? And because, as I understand it, the former ombudsman did a short stint in the civil service at the town council, defending the government in court. So, speaker, is it that it is only possible to be independent in the assessment of claims about whether the government has acted administratively properly or improperly, their government or our government, because the ombudsman considers cases sometimes going back 7 years, 10 years. If one comes from outside the government and not with it from within, because we did that, they have forgotten, Mr. Speaker, that the person who was Gibraltar's first ombudsman was the chairman of Action for Housing. And is it that they don't look at the ombudsman's report and see that the majority of the complaints relate to housing? So they don't impugn to the impartiality of somebody coming from outside who has taken a position in relation to housing. In fact, they propose them, and yet, when somebody comes from the Treasury Department, they impugn the ability of the individual to be impartial. Mr. Speaker, I understand that they're gasping for political bread and they're looking for any points to take. They should take the good ones, not the bad ones. The crisis in the GSD should not become an issue, Mr. Speaker, that leads them simply in an attempt to stay alive politically, in an attempt to stay alive politically, to impugn somebody's impartiality.
It has to be on a point of order. He is not just asking the Chief Minister to give way. It is on a point of order. What standing order are you referring to?
Question of relevance to debate, Mr. Speaker. Relevance to debate. What is it?
You want me to rule on relevance? I want to hear you. What is irrelevant? What do you consider to be irrelevant in what the Chief Minister is saying?
Any references to the GSD or its future, Mr. Speaker? To the GSD or its future, Mr. Speaker, what has that got to do with this debate?
Well, we have three parties represented in this House among the members. We have two independent members. Are you asking me to rule whether any references to the future of those parties is relevant? A passing reference. Because one thing you do is to enlarge on a point which can be introducing new material when the Chief Minister decides to write or drive. Enlarging on a point, developing a point, can be new material. A passing reference is not new material, or is that irrelevant? Now, having heard the leader of the position, I now want to hear what the Chief Minister's view is on this question of relevance.
My position, my political position as leader of the House, is that their party's structure, the destruction of the fabric of the opposition by the of the GSD.
I have invited the Chief Minister.
He said this is going well beyond explaining his point.
I think the new leader of the opposition is not going to make my life easy. If apart from raising a point of order, he is also going to instruct me as to how I should judge the issue. I hope that you will give me an opportunity to listen to both sides and then perhaps take a view.
On the issue of relevance and debate, of the complete structure of the GSD, of the crisis that there is, the political crisis that there is in College Lane, in respect to the government, that the party that was the government and is now not able even to keep the in opposition under its grip. This is, of course, simply this, and it's immediately relevant. They need to be politically somehow relevant to this community. And in my case, is that they are taking a position against Philip Dalyan, and they are taking other political positions simply to try and remain politically relevant. And in this House, when I am addressing how people should vote, and I'm addressing 17 members, two of whom used to take the whip of the GSD and do not any longer, I wish to develop the point that part of what has happened in this House, and what has happened in other debates, is that the political crisis in the GSD is infecting the political debate that is put by the leader of that party in this House, who is, for now at least, the leader of the opposition. I've read today in one of the local newspapers that there is even an attempt to interpret the constitution which they published with great fanfare in 2013 in such a purposive way that it makes it difficult for people, no doubt, to have confidence in how they interpret everything else. And that is why, Mr. Speaker, I think that the complete breakdown of a party that held government for 60 years but now is unable even to hold the seat that it was elected to represent in the House is irrelevant to this debate, as it has been relevant in debate in this House in the past, to mention many things which might not be directly relevant to the issue of a motion or an act, but which are politically relevant, and I will put it to another gentleman opposite, that if they try to restrict what a person can consider to be politically relevant to an argument that they make, they, even from the opposition seat, will seek to govern debate in Gibraltar. They're even attempting to stop the Chief Minister of Gibraltar from expressing his view, and God forbid that they should ever hold government again, because then we would lose once again freedom of speech in the community, in the same way as we excluded the new people from press conferences of the government whilst they held their office, because they simply didn't share their views and criticise them. So let us hope that those who represent that attempt to stop political debate do not in the future hold office in this country.
I take the view that a passing reference made about the future of a political party is not irrelevant. Had the two things had attempted to develop the point in the manner in which he has done now, I would have called him to order. But that has happened as a result of the point of order which the leader of the opposition has raised. But as part of his substantive speech, I would have called him to order. But a passing reference is not relevant. Development of it is outside the scope of the debate. Please carry on.
So, Mr. Speaker, as I was saying in passing, the honourable members appear to, because of the political crisis affecting the BOP, look for any. I'm just picking up where I left off. I'm not going to continue with it. I've explained why I think the political crisis in the BOP has become so relevant to them. But what I was saying was that they are taking any point they can in order to try and paper over not the crap but the cavern that is appearing in the BOP. So, that is now affecting Dilip Dhaninandhara. What do you want to affect next? Let's hope it's not something which goes to the local national interest. Let us hope it doesn't, Speaker. And I hope that they take the summer to reflect on where they are and where Gibraltar would expect them to be. But it is true, Mr. Speaker, that Dilip Dhaninandhara has not been appointed to a post that requires impartiality by the GSLP Liberal administration, but he was appointed by the GSB administration, by the former chief minister, to a post that certainly requires impartiality, the post of financial secretary, which carries with it secretary obligations. And he discharged that, and I made the point of my speech. In an exemplary fashion, both from 2007 to 2011 under the GSB, and from 2011 December to 2013 or 2014 under the GSLP Liberal administration. This is a man who has demonstrated his impartiality and his ability to be impartial to a GSB administration and to a GSLP Liberal administration. And so therefore, Mr. Speaker, his qualification as a civil servant enables him to understand the very system that he will be involved in looking at and ensuring that it's operating in the right way. Can that be done by somebody from outside the civil service? Absolutely can be done. Henry Pina did it very well. Can it be done by somebody who has less experience of the civil service? Absolutely can be done. Maria Fox did it very well. Can it be done by somebody who has experience in their workings of the civil service? Well, arguably, Mr. Speaker, it can be done better, because he may be able to understand better what it is that needs to be fixed when the complaints come in. The jury is out. But what he's certainly not doing, and what we think is very uncharitable, is the suggestion that he cannot do it because he has been a civil servant. Mr. Speaker, it's a good thing that Mr. Yamas no longer sits with the GSB Whip. Otherwise, he might have something to say about it. If Mr. Yamas were in the future to retire as a civil servant, is it that he can no longer ever make a fair decision about the civil service and whether they have acted properly or not? Mr. Clearly, being a teacher and in part of civil servants. Is he saying that civil servants are not able to make fair determinations about other civil servants now doing this? I'm sure he is not, Mr. Speaker. It's not necessarily his style to take that judgmental approach against people. And yet that is what is happening in this case. The honourable members opposite are saying that they do not believe, or they are not prepared to have the confidence that Mr. Dilip Dhaninandhara will be able to impartially determine and resolve we give them all, Mr. Speaker, a little bit of a lesson on how speakers are appointed in Parliament. In most parliaments, the speaker is taken from the benches of the Parliament, and the speaker sits in judgment over the implementation of the rules of the Parliament, fairly, even though he comes from one side or the other. Honourable members may know that John Bercow, the current Speaker of the Parliament in Westminster, is a member of the Conservative Party, elected as a Conservative Member of Parliament, and he becomes a Speaker, and Labour members have the confidence that he's going to discharge his obligations. Now, in Gibraltar, we have had a tradition of appointing individuals, somebody from outside the House, and in the case of the Speaker, somebody who is Chief Minister and a member of the AACR. But we've also had instances of somebody being appointed speaker who was not overtly political and didn't have that experience, but who had indicated his preference for a particular point of view. Mr. Harris was wrong, Mr. Speaker, who explained in the Supreme that he had a GOP sticker on his bumper. Speaker, we need to take people at face value, and we have to expect that people will discharge their obligations. What makes it impossible for Dilip Dalai Lama Sivada to discharge his function as ombudsman, simply because he has been a civil servant, and yet all honourable members opposite are able to discharge their functions simply by dint of their election? Well, I know Mr. Dugan, when they were elected, there were some who were left out of the place and felt that they could do a better job than the seven that were elected. I can think of one in particular, Mr. Speaker. But people actually do discharge their obligations. The feeling of members opposite, Mr. Speaker, and I'm talking about what's left of the official opposition, the GSB, Mr. Speaker, the feeling of what's left of the official opposition in respect of the GSB is that nobody has integrity, nobody discharges their functions properly, the media just completely allow themselves to be within roughness by the government, everybody is lacking in integrity, etc. The only people who do a fair job for a day's wage is them. Everybody else is taking the whole ride, hasn't got integrity, etc. Or look at the figure. The success of this nation demonstrates that people go to work and they do their job, and they discharge their functions, and they put distance between themselves and their friends because we're a small community, and they make fair determinations. And when they don't, that there are mechanisms to deal with that, because sometimes people just make mistakes, Mr. Speaker, but not through a structural lack of integrity that only appointments by the GSB can fix, which is what the honourable leader of the opposition has suggested. Well, Mr. Speaker, I must tell honourable members that by the standard that they are seeking to judge others, they would have failed tremendously if they looked at the appointments that they made when they were in office in the application of those sorts of standards to the appointments they made to boards, etc. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, the government is very confident indeed that Dilip Dalai Lama is not just a jolly good fellow. He's not just a person who has rightly been honoured by Her Majesty the Queen by the recognition of a state honour for the work that he has done. He's not rightly also a person appointed by the Chief Justice as a justice of the peace to sit in judgment over people with the power when he's sitting on the bench to imprison people. He is absolutely the right person in this community today to be able to discharge the obligations of ombudsman and resolve issues which might relate to maladministration as somebody who knows how the system works and will be able to assist claimants to fix problems when they arise. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, I deprecate the things that the honourable member opposite has said, and I commend the appointment of Mr. Pirados to the House.
I now put the question in the sense of the motion proposed by the honourable the Chief Minister. Those in favour? There are 8 government members present, 2 are absent, so there are 8 votes in favour. The honourable Marianne Hassan?
Yes, in favour. So I haven't asked to speak, Mr. Speaker.
How are you voting?
In favour.
In favour. 9 votes in favour. The honourable Warren Janet? You are abstaining, and the official opposition are also abstaining. So the motion is carried by 9 votes and 6 abstentions.
Five. And, yeah, as you said, two members of the government absent, one member of the opposition also absent, which explains five and not two.
Private member's motion, the Honourable R.M. Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move the motion standing in my name, which reads as follows. The leaders requesting the House to introduce a bill for an act to amend the Financial Services and Money Lending Act in the form of tax, is to make provision for the Minister of the Responsibility for Finance to publish in the Gazette the details of money lender licenses in issue annually, and also to publish notice of revocation and issue of new money lending licenses in the Gazette. Hello, Mr. Speaker. My motion in seeking leave to amend the money, the Financial Services and Money Lending Act, is not one that this House should have any particular difficulty with. Since his objective being to publish the details of holders of money lending licenses, in fact, already enjoys the implicit support of the Chief Minister, who in December 2016 stated he was, and I quote, happy to consider making a provision to publish the list generally in future. Mr. Speaker, we all recognise that the Financial Services Money Lending Act has its origin in legislation that dates back 100 years to 1917. And that despite subsequent amendments, it is still an area perhaps out of date or lacking in effective concept for modern transparency and disclosure. Mr. Speaker, this piece of legislation has in recent years become of increased public interest and importance since the date the government revealed that Credit Finance Limited had been issued with a money lending license, and yet to this day, there is no official register where the public can verify this information. Mr. Speaker, indeed, other government-owned entities, such as Gibraltar Home Loans Company Limited, have also apparently been granted licenses by the Chief Minister in his sole discretion, which again cannot be independently verified. Mr. Speaker, the question of confidentiality otherwise of a list of the money lending license holders has indeed been discussed in this House for now well over a year. The Honourable Damon Bettino raised it in question 389 of 2015, in May 2015, and again subsequently in question 442 of 2015, in June 2015, and I myself raised it in December 2016, in question 921 of 2015. Mr. Speaker, in answer to all those questions, the Chief Minister indicated that he was indeed open to the publication of a list of license holders, but that the absence of specific provision to this void, despite the fine of the access to publication, he would not display the list openly to Parliament. Mr. Speaker, my view is a nonsensical position that the Chief Minister has adopted. Since under the money lending rules made under Section 9 of the said same Act, there is in fact a very specific requirement for any applicant for money lending license to advertise the fact in the Gazette. And so it is patently absurd that the application for a license has to be made public, and yet the grant of the license is not. If the application is such public interest and needs to be gazetted, then so more should it be granted. Mr. Speaker, the Chief Minister did, in 2016 in December, offer to discuss the facts of the behind the Speaker's chair as to how the list might be published. I politely declined this offer because I could see no point in discussing a subject that is manifestly so simple to resolve. I saw no advantage to the public interest in those in discussing behind the Speaker's chair. Mr. Speaker, It is subject matter so simple. As the chief minister himself said in May 2015, that he would, and I quote, carefully look into whether this could be something that can be provided for publicly in the future, in this house, or even perhaps on a register, which is maintained on a website. For some reason, this is still done by the Ministry for Finance, not by any other entity, but it's something that, at first blush, I agree with him. There's no reason why it should not be made public. End quote. Mr. Speaker, and I wrote this speech some time ago, in 2 months, one of the right world roles in Spain that happened in the past 2 years ago, and yet nothing has been done to address the matter. But you think, I appreciate the Chief Minister and the government are busy with Brexit and other matters. And thus, in order to assist the business of this House, I have proposed the simple amendment to the Act, which, if this House agrees, will modernise the Act and settle the question of disclosure once and for all. Mr. Speaker, it cannot be right that the public cannot see who has been granted and hold the money lending license, or indeed whose license has been revoked. It is a matter of public interest. And Mr. Speaker, I would be very surprised if the government finds itself unable to support my motion as drafted. But if they have some technical difficulty with the wording I have used, in this instance, I'm open to them amending my draft bill and motion as they see fit, provided, of course, that the overriding public interest principle of transparency and disclosure is met. I certainly speak it for all the reasons I have just set out, I commend my motion to that.
I propose the question in return for the motion moved by the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Well, I think that the Honourable Gentleman has at least gone back and looked at what I said in 2015 and 2016. And that I gave him the opportunity to talk to me about how we might deal with this issue, short of having to amend the legislation. Because I was, of course, going to remind him of that, given that he moved the motion without even the courtesy of a phone call or writing to him to say, look, bear in mind if we do this in this way, would this find support? Does this deal with the manner in the way that you might have felt if I'd taken you up in that discussion that you could support? Because he would have found that he said my answer would have been, but I do not support doing things in this way. He didn't speak, I am the Minister of Finance has responsibility for signing these applications. Vetted by the financial secretary, but of course, it's also an area of relevance for a minister of the financial services. I've once again checked in case, but it's been confirmed to me that Mr. Clinton has not raised the issue with the minister of the financial services. And we would have thought, Mr. Speaker, there was a genuine desire to act in a way that is in concert and in the interest of the community, then a phone call. Would not have been a method, an attempt to try and find a common way forward. Otherwise, Mr. Speaker, one is left to thinking that this is just an attempt to score political points. A political point that may not have appeared relevant to members when they were in government. So, for 15 years, they have a chance to change this act. It would have been easy for them to do. They didn't do so. How about the government? Has now taken money lending licenses. That's why it's relevant now. Is it, Mr. Speaker? Is it relevant because the government has taken money lending licenses? Because the government has said when it's taking money lending licenses, has explained why it's taking money lending licenses, and is probably the most generous when it comes to determining how to lend money and ensuring that, of course, as long as that is secure, that loans should be granted in the parameters that have been explained to the council. So, the issue is really those others that have money lending licenses. Now, it is true they have to advertise that they apply for money lending licenses. Okay? So, that it's no secret that people are
hold the money in the right because they're going to have to advertise for that. And so do those who apply for licenses to the OSP, the old trading licenses as we used to be called. And yet there isn't a list published of those who succeed to obtain licenses. And that's exactly the same model that there is here. And I remain open to considering genuinely whether this is something that can be done in some way, short of requiring a legislative change. But I'm not, Mr. Speaker, going to be minded to agree to the opposition driving the cart on this, simply because they have decided that this is an issue that they want to pursue, whether it's Mr. Messina, who, from what one hears, might be one of the people who is deciding to try and come back to the fray. Although I hear about these people coming out of the frame, coming back to the floor as far as I can see. Or who now is leader of the opposition decides that he wants to continue to promote this matter that he had dealt with before when he wasn't leader of the opposition? And what does it matter, Mr. Speaker, that the grant of licenses is in the form of the expression of the Chief Minister? Or is he also imputing bad faith to the Chief Minister of Gibraltar when his identity changes on the 9th of December 2011? Because I will remind him that it was the people of Gibraltar who sacked the previous incumbent. Mm-hmm. And so, Mr. Speaker, it makes very little sense. He wants to do something potentially sensible in the way that he has done it, which is to present a motion to amend the Financial Services Act without speaking to the Minister for Financial Services or accepting the olive branch of the Chief Minister to have a discussion behind the Speaker's chair. I mean, it is quite something, Mr. Speaker. I say to him, let us discuss it, and I'm not interested in discussing it. Let us do it my way or the highway. That's what he says before he leaves the opposition. That's the attitude he continues to take as leader of the opposition. A world of that if he ever becomes the Chief Minister of Gibraltar. A world of that. But that, Mr. Speaker, is the GSB way. We saw St. Peter ruling from St. Peter's Church. And now we're seeing Roy the Rover trying to say it's incredible that at a time when we should be trying to work together on a simple issue like the Financial Services Act, but which can have consequences, and we should do a consultation with those who hold licenses. My inclination, my case, as I've said repeatedly, is that we should publish this, but to impose that without discussing it with those who hold licenses. The Speaker is not the modern way of doing things. It's the GSB way of doing things. In position of a view, despite an invitation to a discussion. I remain in the view that this is something that potentially could be a good thing to do and perhaps it should be done. I am convinced that this is not the right way to do it, Mr. Speaker. And so, Mr. Speaker, I am afraid that the Honourable Gentleman is not going to have support from this side of the House when it comes to his proposal. I do not think that the issues that he has raised in the context of his presentation of this motion advance matters any further. The fact that Credit Finance Company Limited is money in the license is a matter disclosed by the government and defended by the government as a matter of policy. And publishing the name of Credit Finance Company Limited on a list is not going to change that. It's not going to add to transparency. Quite the opposite. We have been more transparent than they ever were about the workings of government companies. And so, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman is going to find that his motion is not going to enjoy a fair win. But I will say this, it's a pity that although he moved his motion and he was not leader of the opposition, he has decided to continue in the same as leader of the opposition. And I hope that with the warmer months to come, some have called it the silly season, that he enjoys more than one glass of warm prosecco, and we consider this time.
Any other member wish to speak on this motion? I will then call upon the moment for reply.
Mr. Speaker, we're raising up to one in fact, and that prosecco is best than cold, but if you can sort of let it go and say why I might want to drink it. Mr. Speaker, all I've heard from the Chief Minister this afternoon is that he wants to vet everything that this side of the House presents to Parliament. It is our right, Mr. Speaker, to present motions to this House in any way, shape, or form
that we, the fire house, determine is appropriate, and not that we have to say we keep them at every time we have a motion or wish to them to the house, that is, of course, valid with the Speaker's permission. Mr. Sigler, you raised a couple of interesting points, and I'm of course disappointed that he can't see it himself to relinquish the driving of a car that is so rapidly equipped for himself, in that he cannot let go of driving the car for a minute to perhaps consider the wider public interest. Or to himself admit, look, we have merit in publishing this list. He just doesn't want the idea to be part of the opposition benches. Well, that's fine, Mr. Speaker. I'll let him take full credit for it. I will let him take full credit for any initiative in respect to publication of a register of money lenders. And I will leave the ball in his court. I certainly expect within the lifetime of this Parliament, as he is so fond of saying, to undertake this consultation with holders of the money lenders' licenses. And at the end of that period, hopefully by the end of this Parliament, find a method other than by legislation, which frankly I find hard to find any other way of doing it, but of course he is the Chief Minister, he is the Oracle, he will know better than I, and we are non-lawyer, as to how these things can best be done. Mr. Speaker, in the course of his intervention, he has to raise perhaps a more important point, which is tangential to my motion, and that is the question of public registers. He raises the example of the Office of Fair Trading, where people will apply for licenses, but there's no way of determining whether licenses have been granted. Surely, Mr. Speaker, he should make that a matter of urgency to address that, because how else are the public to determine whether something they're dealing with is validly licensed? I will.
Mr. Speaker, the owner must be aware that by statute, any premises which is operated on the business license is obliged by law to have that license on show, so that is not really a comparative with the
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Honourable Member of Intervention. Of course, no. Well, fair enough, but feel free to do that as you please, Mr. Speaker. The point I'm going to make to the responsible Honourable Minister, the responsible small businesses, are our businesses necessarily have business waivers, and of course, there's no way of looking up a name in a register, so, are these individuals registered? But again, Mr. Speaker, this is tangential to my original motion. But he does raise the point about the public register, which is what the Chief Minister was referring to. And I would urge the government, if it is not doing so already, to consider this as part of a wider exercise to ensure full public transparency in any form of license granting. I mean, look, if you go and apply for a insurance license or any other type of license, you can quite well easily go onto the website and ask the certification and look it up. You don't have to give some premises and say, oh, look, there's a license on the wall. You can go and look it up quite easily. I'm sure this will be something that perhaps the government will consider in their e-government program to ensure that everything that involves the license is public. But then again, Mr. Speaker, I wouldn't want the Chief Minister to feel that he's losing control of his car. And so, Mr. Speaker, he talked about the GSD imposing things on people, and not to be fair, it's not true. They are the new going government. Remember, they're the ones who are going to have more transparency than anybody else. Well, Mr. Speaker, if they do have it, why haven't they introduced this yet? Why do we have to keep reminding them to do it? Why is the Chief Minister says, oh no, it's too difficult for me to do, I can't publish a list, it's far too difficult. I said, Mr. Speaker, there really isn't much more for me to say, you know, other than trying to speak louder than the Chief Minister when he's making a snide comment, is that the ball is fairly and squarely in his court, and he can keep on driving the car. But somehow they will return on that, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much.
I now put the question to you that we'll talk to the division as well. You're fine for the division, very well. I now put a question in terms of the motion proposed by the Honourable Leader of the Opposition, and we will now have a division.
Balwan, PJ.
No.
JJ Rafani.
Oh.
RM Clinton.
Yep.
NF Costa.
No.
JJ Garcia.
No.
PM Hammond.
Yes.
MD Hassanan.
No.
AJ Isola.
No.
GH Ikudi.
No.
LS Yama. EJ Phillips. Yeah. Omar Pitalo.
No.
EJ Reyes.
Yes.
SJ Sapanco.
No.
There are three members absent, six are voted in favor, eight against the motion is defeated.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it has been a long session. A session which has included the debate on the appropriation. If the Honourable Gentleman had given way, I would even have shared with him, Mr. Speaker, an opportunity to have, during the course of the debate, asked me to look at Section 9 of the Financial Services and Money Lending Act, which allows the Chief Minister to make rules without the need for changes in primary legislation to do the things he wanted. I say that, Mr. Speaker, by start the process of wishing honourable members a pleasant summer. I know for them it will be a very political time, but I do hope that all of us will be able to enjoy with our families a longer break, and that the musical chairs that we've seen on the other side do not leave anybody else using their chair, and that we come back ready to work together for Gibraltar, that we come back ready perhaps to leave it behind us. A style of politics that has not been engaged with Gibraltar, and where we are, let's say so, and follow more often than not the speakers and treaties to work together in the best interest of our community. And I therefore now move, Mr. Speaker, that the House to adjourn speedily, and that in keeping with the comments in the British newspapers, people don't enjoy more than one glass too many of warm for a second, because that can lead to the leadership of a party changing even once again. So I don't know whether everything is okay. I move the House now again, speedily.
If I may, there is a point in which I would like honourable members to reflect on, particularly those who are hopefully someday to be involved in the resurrected committee on the electoral, political, and parliamentary reform. But there is a fundamental difference between what happens here in this Parliament and what happens in the House of Commons when a member seeks permission or leave, shall I say, to introduce a private member's bill. In the House of Commons, because of the expediencies of the time element, and also because there is a separation of the office of Leader of the House and the Prime Minister, there is a Leader of the House who spends a great deal of time in the House of Commons and who is basically responsible for the agenda, for what Parliament discusses. And therefore, any member wishing to introduce a private member's bill must, it is not that they have to have the approval of the government, no. What they do need is that the Leader of the House will make time available. If the Leader of the House does not make time available for a motion seeking leave to introduce the private member's bill, then that cannot be done. Time is of the essence in the House. Here, honourable members have a great advantage in that all they need to do is to give notice of the motion, which if I as Speaker find is perfectly acceptable, then it goes on to the political agenda. But the difference also is that in the UK, it doesn't go on the agenda, and until the leader of the House of Commons knows about it and has seen it, and the government takes a view whether it is going to be proceeded with or not. Here, the difference is, any member doesn't have to be a member of the opposition. There have been members of the government that have introduced the Honourable Danny Seaton. I think it's so. Ask people of the House, but if you don't have the approval of the Chief Minister of the day, I don't mean by that agreement with the working body, but that it should go on the agenda, and then it wouldn't proceed. So he said on that, consider whether, if ever the rules of the House are amended, how they should be amended. But I'd like them to reflect, because it occurred to me that there is such a difference. Here, the Chief Minister is also the leader of the House. That is not the case in the House of Commons, and that can introduce a divergence of procedure. I now move the House will now adjourn seemingly.